Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome to the KE Report Weekend Show. Corey Fleck here, along with Chad Marquitz. We are your hosts for this weekend's edition. Please be sure to go back through our website, kereport.com, and podcast. Just search the KE Report in your podcast player to listen to all the daily market commentary editorials, as well as company interviews. On this weekend show, we're going to be focusing on resource equities and more the sectors, the type of stocks that we think have some of the best upside as we turn the corner into the new year, all focused around portfolio management, having insights from a fund manager as well as one of our more selective newsletter writers when it comes to selecting stocks that he holds in his portfolio. Look, overall this year, I think has been good for investors in the resource sector. Yes, a number of juniors have continued to lag, but there's been a lot of outperforming stocks and a lot of doubles and triples throughout this year. To kick off the show, we're chatting with Tavi Costa. Tavi, thank you very much for joining us. Tavi is the partner at Crescat Capital. Crescat is very active in funding a lot of junior exploration companies and providing that liquidity to these companies to get exploring. Tavi, that's where I want to start. Simply the overall market environment for the junior sector. What are you seeing right now? What are you focusing on?
Well, first, thanks for having me. It almost feels like a wave is coming, and we can see it from far away, and it's getting closer. And the money has not trickled down yet to the smaller businesses, but the bigger companies, which their main currency is their share price, is starting to move. And we've seen some of the major companies moving quite significantly in the last 12 months. And I think that eventually will turn into the even more, you know, we've been saying that the M&A cycle has started and we're seeing some M&A activity, but in my view, this is nowhere close to what we're going to see, just given the fact of the depletion of reserves of most of the majors. And their need for replenishing the reserves is going to be into potentially causing a lot of the M&A activity to heat up in a significant way. And so, but the companies are doing better. You can see margins doing much better. I remember back in September 2022, Wall Street Journal put out an article and said, in their front page actually, that gold lost its reserve status. We're about $1,000 higher on gold prices since the magazine cover curse, and cost has not gone up as much, right? Cost has not gone up $1,000 an ounce to mine. And so most of the companies are actually doing better fundamentally, despite the skepticism. And I would say that with the new leadership politically and other things that are just sort of the nature of the mining industry is likely to be seen as critical again, as a critical industry for the economy. And be surprising if that money doesn't flow into all parts of the overall industry. And so it is exciting. Things are working, but you know, I don't think investors know we're done in terms of not only allocating capital, but looking for opportunities. There's plenty of opportunities out there. And so it's time to be busy.
Well, Tavi, let's dig into that concept a little bit more as far as the opportunities you see. We talked with a lot of companies that said it's honestly easier to go buy a producing asset that is already permitted, that has the sunk cost, even if it's a fixer-upper, than it is to try to go explore, develop, permit, build, get the capital structure together for a mining complex. So is that the environment that you are seeing right now, that it's almost easier to go make an acquisition and we should see more M&A as a result of that than it is to actually go start a grassroots project and bring it all the way through fruition?
Yeah, I don't think we have, as a fund, changed the focus on exploration. And I think all that happened for us was that we had a very successful investment that has been transformational for us, which has been the purchase of a producing asset in Bolivia, the seventh largest silver mine in the world, the San Cristobal mine. And so that's an interesting take from what you said. I think our take is slightly different, but I guess what you said applies here too, is more of the fact that you have access to the cash flow of a mine to replenish or actually recapitalize other things that you feel it's important, such as exploration and focus on growth, which is most of the major companies are not really focused on volume. They're really focused on returning capital to shareholders and still very friendly shareholder policies rather than focusing on volume and growth in general. And I think if there was ever a time to be doing that, it's now. And I think it's been also a reflection of what's happening in exploration space as well. Exploration industry is, the big discoveries, the kind of major discoveries we've seen, like Snowline, for instance, they have performed well. We know that the value there has, not to say that it has, in our view, reached its peak of valuation, but certainly has behaved better than other assets. And in exploration segment, you can kind of see that there are some companies that put out, what we call discovery holes, and they put out maybe not three, which is the sort of, rule of thumb. You get three discovery holes, you have a discovery. Well, we have companies that have put out, I guess dozens of results that are supposedly discovery holes and are not really seeing the fruits of those of that success. And no, I think that's an opportunity, in my opinion. So we've been spending a lot of time trying to sort of clean up the portfolio as much as we can to own most of those companies we think are in that position that have intrinsically improved, but the market is just not caring about that right now. I do think there's some, we've seen some of those things you said about producing assets are slightly easier because they're, having a fixer-up sort of approach versus actually taking into production an asset that's still under development and so forth. I can see some of that being a big problem, but there's also a lack of developers in this industry, right? I mean, every exploration company is a seller. In other words, as soon as they get a discovery, they want to sell the company. And nobody, there's a gap in the development phase right now. Nobody wants to take those discoveries into production. And the producers don't want to mess with that either. They, as you said, they're trying to buy other producing assets. And so there's sort of a gap in between those. That's going to be an opportunity, my opinion, because there's some great assets there where you can buy lots of gold in the ground and for very cheap valuations. So if you can tackle on a producing asset with that level of opportunity, then it becomes really interesting. And I think there's opportunities like that, in some parts of the world today.
Javi, I find this very interesting because we definitely have seen a shift of companies, both big and small, focusing on producing assets. With the higher metals price, look, a lot of these assets, almost all of these assets, really look like they should make money at these current prices, especially the ones that are built. But what sort of red flags do you look for when you're doing some of this analysis? Because again, these assets that are built, they could have already bankrupted a couple companies, but they look attractive now. So what are some of the red flags that shy you away from some of the assets you've looked at already?
Well, those are good questions. I think most of the red flags from an operational standpoint is, well, I guess they're not crazy red flags. I mean, we've been looking at assets that have some issues with recoveries, issues with, let's say, heap leach operations that we can apply different technologies into. So those have been the main places where we've been and scalable companies, it doesn't need to be massive. I think the key of San Cristobal was being able to buy an asset that wasn't, it's very large, but it wasn't big, so big that we couldn't have control over the asset itself. And I think keeping the equity control is absolutely critical. And the only way you can do that is on a profitable mine that is able to sustain some level of leverage. And that's the dance you're kind of playing, right? You're buying an asset that has some issues, that the margin is somewhat thin at this point, but there is a potential to change that. And at the same time, you're looking for something that you're just trying to get a structurally right from an equity to debt perspective, that then you can restructure at later stages as you improve the business, by deleveraging at later stages and maybe taking it public and so forth. But red flags are plenty. I mean, I think environmental is a big one. And some of those things you end up learning more at deeper stages of the situations. I mean, we've seen failures of heap leach operations recently, and all these things are now in the investor's mind. But, there's a lot more from an environmental standpoint that needs to be, that when you're buying those mines. Maybe it would say the employment side is somewhat of a problem sometimes, but not a major issue. I think environmental is probably the top one in mind. We're very much aware of the potential for having for finding more ore in some of these mines. If we don't have that view, we're probably not going to be interested in getting involved. So I think that's sort of a first box that needs to be checked. But and I think mines today that are being perceived as short-term mine lives and have that potential to be extended, in a multi-year horizon, and at the same time allow you to potentially use that as a balance sheet to do more things is really where the strategy, I think, aligns well in this, rising metal price environment. So I'm not sure if I'm answering fully your question, but there's a lot of typical red flags that I don't want to say here just because I think everybody knows it well, but it really is unique to the asset in a certain way. There's permits that are that could be a problem when you're looking at expanding production in different parts of the world. But all those things are very unique to each asset. So we've been in acquisition processes that turn out to be the case that, issues are much bigger than we initially thought. And it doesn't mean necessarily that scares us away. I mean, we like buying assets with some level of hair because it decreases competition, but it also increases the complexity of the deal itself, but doesn't scare us away at all. I think it's actually a positive things in a lot of ways.
Yeah, Tavi, I think some great points there. And I think everybody knows environmental issues are the big one. But like you say, there's other things you look for in a mine that may have hair on it. And when you're seeing other companies making some of these acquisitions, we often see peanuts comments from the peanut gallery saying, why did they make this acquisition? Or that's not a great mine. But a lot of times people are looking at things through the lens of the past instead of how it could be optimized, how cost could be reduced, the potential for discovery, like you were mentioning, that you could actually expand the resources. So maybe talk about the green flags, like what you're looking for in an asset that could give it unrealized upside that people are discounting now, but maybe over the fullness of time could be realized.
Yeah, and I think that I personally love to find those boring mining businesses where they have consistently made money in somewhat of a challenging environment. Maybe recoveries have not been as good as they supposed to be, or grades have not been as good as they're supposed to be, and so forth. But they're still profitable. And because they seem to be boring, nobody's interested in them. But if you're of the view that there's a lot more to be found, and assuming there are no, environmental constraints or permitting constraints to expand, this is where opportunities lie ahead. And it seems a lot easier said than done when you're looking for these things, because a lot of times they're really not obvious. And I think all of us fall into that category that you just mentioned of looking at acquisitions and saying, what are they actually thinking? And we just have not done the work to have that view in the first place. And so, so I think that there's some opportunities today, especially in South America, which has been now a lot of focus has been turning to Argentina. But in my view, every country in South America today, most of the countries in South America today, look very attractive from a value standpoint. And so we've been really focused in that region today, because I do think strategically this is going to be a place where capital will flow back into those areas. These are areas that understand mining very well and are much easier to potentially change the landscape when it comes to permitting and how quick you can get something into production, particularly if you're buying something in production that you find an extension of that that requires some higher level of development to put that other aspect into production too. So I think that South America is certainly a big focus of at least mine at this stage. And some of those, I guess, green flags is always important to find company. Well, we've had two situations. We're looking at a mine, for instance, with an incredible team, right? That was St. Cristobal, incredible team put in place, and much easier to kind of do a management led by of the company and sort of allow the existing management and kind of align them accordingly to perform well and have a significant ownership of the mine. But there are other assets where it can be quite tricky. The main reason why the mine is not doing well is because of the actual management. And so you have to make a major transition of the personnel, and that can be in culture and all sorts of things, and that can be somewhat tricky. But that's a lot of times this is where opportunities also lie ahead, and where we like to focus on. And it's really looking at stress testing what is perceived as hair is absolutely critical as an investor in anything you do, because that's usually where the opportunity is. And so there's no formula to these things, and it's not an exact science, or it's more of an art. And so, and every person will have their own strengths in terms of pursuing these ideas.
So, Tavi, San Cristobal, that's a silver mine. You said you're still looking in South America. Are you seeing more opportunities in silver mines, gold mines, or are you going to go into the base metals? A lot of people have been focused on copper, but those are much larger assets. So which metals are you focused on for acquiring?
We're very metal agnostic, but I guess copper has been certainly a big focus. Gold mines, I think not too long ago, and you can see this in public markets too. If you look at copper mines versus gold mines or miners in terms of ETFs, you can see easily the relative performance of copper miners have been quite, I guess, significantly better than gold miners, despite the fact that gold has outperformed copper quite significantly as well. And that has mostly to do with institutional capital chasing these things. And so we started looking a little further into gold assets in a big way, because the fact that you don't have the same level of institutional capital chasing these copper assets, it makes it more inefficient, and so you can find some better opportunities. Silver assets are difficult to find, but it's still number one focus if there is one. It's always harder to find. Zinc mines and lead are certainly part of our focus too, and very open-minded to those, especially as they continue to be perceived as critical metals as we move forward. But again, I think being open-minded and sort of metal agnostic, because while everybody likes to have specific views on specific metals, once gold gets into a secular change, it tends to drive all sorts of things a long way. And copper tends to move alongside. Yes, it's more cyclical, but if gold goes up, usually copper goes up as well. Silver does the same thing. We know of the gold to silver ratio. All of us follow that closely. And when silver really starts going, all of us know that there's a lot of leverage in silver prices. Therefore, why I like to focus on that too. But that's not just the case. I mean, if you look at zinc prices over 100 years of price history, you find that it's in a massive upper channel. And so I see no issues also buying a mine with that type of exposure. So there's very openness, and I would love to be somewhat open-minded to lithium. It's definitely not our expertise, and we don't know much about that market, but given the fact that it's gone down so much, and understanding the dynamics of rotations of how commodities work, I mean, when you're in a commodities bull market, it doesn't mean things go up forever. I mean, they kind of rotate from one to another. And that's basically what we're seeing. And now lithium is out of flavor, but it will probably come back in favor again and at some point. And so I'm open-minded to that as well. I wasn't as open-minded before, but certainly now it's something I'm more and more curious about. And it's not an expertise of Crescent or our group that looks to acquire these things, but certainly is when prices come down as much as they did, I think it becomes an opportunity as well.
Well, Tavi, just tying this all together, when you're looking at making acquisitions in the space, whether it's exploration, development, or production assets, we've talked about red flags, we've talked about green flags, we've talked about the metals, even got into the jurisdiction a little bit. I guess just tie it all together for us as far as seeking value creation cyclically within, I guess, within a cyclical cycle. Like, there's times to buy and there's times to sell. There's times to make acquisitions and there's times to make hay while the sun's shining. What kind of time period are we in? How much longer will this acquisition window be open? And at what point would you not be interested in acquisitions where you just want to develop the assets you have?
Well, there's a secular change itself, and there's also ups and downs and different types of things you should do during that secular change. I think first thing you need to do is and have a view about that. Is are we in a long-term upward movement for gold prices? That's the metal you need to focus the most. If you are of the view the central banks will continue to buy gold and have to also, really enhance the quality of their international reserves and pushing the metal price higher, then you are also of the view that silver, copper, zinc, all sorts of things are going to do well as well. Now, this is a long-term thing. There are times in the 70s where miners were down 70%. Are you ready for that? And that's, that those are going to be great opportunities. You're going to be tested along the way, and there are going to be times where the acquisition window opens and the acquisition window closes. Right now, it's open and it's very difficult. Now, there's a lot of competition. There's definitely plenty of capital chasing these opportunities right now. Funny enough, they're not happening in the exploration space. None of the capital is going there right now. And oftentimes that's where the opportunity lies ahead. But in my view, so the acquisition window for the exploration space is just getting open now, because that capital ultimately will, if we look at the acquisitions we've seen so far, in the context of the market, in the context of history, they're not frothy, but in the context of where we are in the market and where valuations are of the whole industry, some of them are somewhat frothy. But that, if people are willing to pay that in those parts of the producing assets and so forth, at some point that capital starts chasing other opportunities that are cheaper. At some point, they end up finding out that exploration and some development names are extremely cheap and should be part of the opportunity. So, my view is that you have to be have keep yourself grounded on the secular opportunity, but also be open-minded of the cyclicality of that as well, of which being able to step in when the timing is right. And so, for instance, gold prices go down 20, 30%, I would welcome that. I hope that happens personally. No, because I think that would be great. I think that window of opportunity would open again for acquisitions of producing assets. A lot of the producing assets being sold, and folks looking to sell those assets are going to be under pressure. And so I'm looking forward to those times as well. And they're going to come. They're going to happen again, because they always happen. And so, it's just, I guess, learning history and as much as you can, so you can be ready for those opportunities, understanding that they will come and that things transition. They're not always the same way. 5 years from now, exploration can be, the top performing segment of the industry. And would that surprise you? It wouldn't surprise me. And so, we're going to see those changes within the industry as part of this secular, movement in gold prices alone. And so, and we're going to go from one metal to another as well. This is just part of the game. Not too long ago, everybody was, basically pounding the table on copper, and then gold had a move. It's so classic. It's all these changes are normal. And, I think we just cannot overthink about these things. I mean, this is, to me, is the best opportunity I've seen in my career. For those thinking, oh, the juniors are not moving, what's going on? Emerging markets are not moving either. Look at the prices of Brazilian banks that have nothing to do with that. And that's because the money has not trickled down from gold specifically into the other things that usually move along with gold: emerging markets, other metals, and the juniors. And that money eventually goes there. It's because all the money is being sucked into the dollar and equity markets in the US, which mostly is going to technologies. But we all know these types of leaderships, they change over time as well. And, in my view, that the transition back to the rest of the world is very likely to happen. And it's probably going to be one of the biggest transitions we're going to see throughout history.
We'll see when that happens. Hey, Tavi, I know a lot of the metals investors are still waiting for that transition, but again, it has been a good year for the metals sector, especially for precious metals and a number of the stocks. Just interesting to hear that even you guys over at Crescat are looking for more of these production assets to acquire. It seems like that's the trend. A lot of companies out there looking for production assets to generate some cash flow so they don't just need to keep going back to the market. Again, Tavi Costa, partner at Crescat Capital. I'll post the link to the Crescat Capital website in the show notes. Tavi, thanks for joining us, and everyone, stick around. We're going to be right back to continue talking about portfolio management in the resource sector.
Al Corlin's firm, AB Corlin and Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.